Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Well, welcome back to Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. And here we are, of course, today on a really wonderful event in the city of Tucson, the Tucson Festival of Books. And at this point in time, I'd like to welcome my special guest and one of the authors, as well as an artist who's been on our show a couple of times, Alan Martin. Welcome to the show, Alan.
Thank you.
Very good. Well, you know, Alan, the Festival of Books, their tagline was "Where words and imagination come to life." And lo and behold, they use a hummingbird as their moniker, which is also yours. So did you have some inside plug on that?
No, I can't say I did. It was just coincidence.
It is a coincidence. Well, let me offer a brief introduction of Alan Martin. For those of you that, in fact, frequent Tucson and know his works, it's AllanMardon.com. Alan is a native of Canada. He grew up near Niagara Falls on a 500-acre farm. And hard work and persistence always paid off, as he learned as he stepped into his art studies at the Slade School, University of London. And prior to that, it was the Ontario College of Art in Toronto. In his 25 years as a high-powered illustrator in New York City, Alan's work has been featured on the cover of Time magazine, within Sports Illustrated, and several children's books. And it was his decision, actually, to retire, or so he thought, that brought him to Tucson some 20 years ago. But as he says, in just 6 weeks, he was off again to the races, and that was indeed the venue he then chose to explore and move into painting. His first painting of the Mission San Javier de Bach near Tucson is now seen as a classic, and it remained on display at the Arizona Inn for years. But between then and now, Alan has done a considerable amount of painting, and his work, in fact, he refers to as narrative art. In fact, the book that he's debuting here this weekend at the Tucson Festival of Books is called, indeed, The Narrative Art of Alan Martin. So, Alan, why don't we explain, first off, what the term narrative art refers to?
Simply telling a story.
Telling a story.
That's all.
That's right. But your focus for most of those stories has focused around the Native Americans, hasn't
it? And that's correct.
And a favorite one that kicked you off?
Well, it was the Mission San Javier painting. And, you know, there had been maybe, I don't know how many thousand paintings of that that have been done. And so this time, I not only had the mission there, but I had the Tohono O'odham people there as well, who were there at the time, and what their life looked like, what their domestic life looked like, and how they farmed, how they weren't really warriors, but they would fight back, and a piece of their spiritual life.
That's wonderful. Well, of course, that first painting that you did is featured in your new book. So tell us the story behind the book itself, how you came up with the idea at this point in your career to want to publish such a collection of works.
Well, I think every artist would like to see all his works between two covers. I guess your ego kind of hollers for it. After 20 years of painting, you'd like to see them all in one spot. And I had this opportunity with Ted to do that, and we've been working on it now in a very short time, actually. But I had, fortunately, I had photographed every painting I've ever done and had a digital file made out of it. Fortunately for me, that was now just standard operating procedure.
Exactly. In fact, that would be an encouragement, you'd probably say, for any artist out there to start early with that kind of inventory.
Without a doubt.
Without a doubt.
Yeah. And so that meant that in a very short time, I was able to get all of the paintings together that I wanted to have in the book. Then all I had to do was to make sure that I would call each one of the collectors and make sure that they wouldn't mind having it credited to their collection. Of course, many don't, and so it was just, anyway, it's just polite. And in this book, I was not burdened with having a lot of copy, because my vision of this book was to have a picture book, and it would be mostly paintings with very few comments. And we are going to give people an opportunity to comment on the book a little later on through a blog on Night Horse's website.
That's right.
And maybe even my website, alanmartin.com.
That's wonderful. Well, you know, you make it simple, like, well, I just went and selected some paintings and voila, I turned it into a book. But the process of your deciding the different chapters that you've selected and then which book, which paintings, did they kind of speak to you or did you always know which ones you would want to feature?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, this book has been sort of churning in my head for a very long time. And I hadn't done anything about it because I hadn't met Ted yet. And so when it came down to it, and when I started to plan the book, it just unfolded. I knew that as a book and as the design of a book, I wanted to have as few design elements as possible. And so I have these big, bright, brightly colored paintings. That's one. And so I didn't want to fight with it anywhere. So what I did is I made sure that when you opened up the book, that there was a nicely bright color painting on your right-hand side and as little as possible on the left-hand side. And in fact, I didn't even bother with type. I just wrote title of the piece, how big it was and what it was painted on. And who owned it, if they wanted me to say so.
To put in perspective for those who aren't familiar with more your work, though, Alan, is that the fact that you've reduced the size of these actually otherwise very large paintings, your typical paintings were how big?
Well, they range anywhere from about, mostly about 4 feet to up to as much as 6 feet or more. And the one that's in the Whitney is almost 7 feet by almost 14 feet.
14 feet, that's right. Yeah. And that, of course, is the Battle of Greasy Grass.
Yes.
Or the Battle of Little Bighorn, as the white men would call
yes.
it.
Yes, yes.
The book, I know the first chapter that you've kicked off is the whole compilation of works related to legends and the stories behind the Native Americans' use of the animals and the changing of the seasons and so on.
Yes, yes.
Which legend of that one was one that particularly brings a lot of joy to you as you think back, whether it be the research or the follow-on reaction to that painting?
Well, what I like about it is that in the beginning I hadn't thought very much about legends, and as I started to paint, and I got past the San Javier del Bac one. I mean, it was a story, and I always wanted to do narratives anyway. I didn't want to do freeze frame paintings. And, you know, like the tapestries did, and the ledger drawings of the Native American themselves. And something comes out of every painting. And as I got into the San Javier painting, the next thing I thought about was the Apache society and their battles and how they were. And then I started to think about Custer for some reason. And the reason I thought about it was that here was a great, huge piece of our history that everybody had an opinion about, and lots of them were locked horns. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, well, that would be interesting to do something about that. And I put I wanted to put the whole 24 hours of the battle on one canvas, which I did. And in doing so, I had to do about a year's worth of research to get enough information to make it at least as accurate as I could with the information at hand today. And in doing so, I kept running across these legends, and I kept running across other facets of their lives. So it was that painting sort of made the master plan for a whole bunch of paintings later. And one of them was the legends, because you can't go very far researching anything with the Plains Indians, Plains for me especially,
yes,
without running into a legend, and usually several versions of the same legend. And And so that's what caught me up in it.
That's interesting. Just to remind our listeners, we're here on Circles of Change, and I'm broadcasting related to the Tucson Festival of Books today, this weekend, the 13th and 14th. In fact, you can come and visit Alan, meet him, as well as see the book that we're referring to called The Narrative Art of Alan Martin. And we're very close to the Old Main Circular Drive, right around the corner from the Daily Star bookstore that's there, amongst the other 200 and some odd exhibitors here today, in addition to all the authors that are presenting as individuals or in panels, as well as various writers' surveys and seminars that are available to anyone who comes and wants to visit us. So again, it's Alan Martin with his work. Alan, the legends, of course, also opens up your whole love of wildlife and different animals, and particularly now a whole separate chapter in your books on horses.
Well, the horse, of course, it was reintroduced to North America in the 1750 by Cortez, and it changed the ways that the Indian moved, how they fought. They no longer had to rely upon dogs to tote that yoke and carry their attention. Now they had a great big beast that could do the same thing, only much more effective, and they could ride him, and they could hunt, and they could fight. I mean, it changed a lot of things.
And then, of course, the one painting that is indeed featured in your book was a painting you didn't do that all that long ago, A Celebration of the Horse.
Yes.
Which was tied into the Southern Arizona Horse Expo that was at the beginning of the year.
That's right.
Again, another very colorful painting, as not just the surrounding, but actually the animals themselves, that your paintings many times don't necessarily portray the animals in various shades of gray or brown or beige, right?
No.
In fact, the colorful ones.
Yes. And, you know, I did that because, you know, here again, when I was working on the Battle of Greasy Grass, that's a big painting with hundreds of figures in it, many, many horses. And there are the military horses, which are black, gray, roan, chestnut, that kind of thing. And they could keep track of their horses that way. Now, then there were the horses that the Indians had. And now I wanted to find some way to separate the military from the Indian on the battlefield. So I struck upon this thing where when you look at a ledger drawing, they would draw a horse, and they didn't draw them the way I draw them, but one of the things they did do is they would draw a horse in any old color that they happened to have. And if they only had a green pencil, the horse was green. So I thought, what a great way just to do that. And I've done it ever since in paintings that have nothing to do with the American Indian. And the funny thing about it is no one has ever asked me, why do I paint horses green, pink, purple, red? It's amazing to me.
And so perhaps it's just such a part of the painting that people wouldn't know to distinguish it or question it.
Apparently it doesn't bother them.
Yeah, that's another way to put it.
Yeah.
Alan, your book, let's get back to this magnificent work. For people who are visiting us down here at the book fair, of course, and the festival, you can pick it up at booth number 167, but also online. You can get it at alanmartin.com as well as nighthorses.com, and that's N-I-G-H-T horses.com. You've got three versions of the book. You want to talk about that?
Yes. One is Perfect Bound, which is a paper cover book. Mm-hmm. By the way, all the books are 12 by 12, and all the reproductions are 12 by 12, except if it's like Greasy Grass, it's a fold out, and other paintings which weren't done on a square format, they've been just accommodated in the book, but for the most part they're square.
The Perfect Bound was the first version,
and then we have a hardbound. And then we have a limited edition of 100, leather-bound edition that will be in a, I think they call it a library box or a clam
That's
box,
great.
I've forgotten
That's
which.
Right.
And it will also have an original sketch in it as well.
That's wonderful.
And signed, of course.
And indeed, anyone who would come to visit us here today at the Tucson Festival book, you'd be happy to sign them as well.
I'd be happy to.
Exactly. You made a passing comment to me while you were developing your book, when you were looking at those final press checks and the like, that actually you felt some of your paintings looked better in the smaller version than otherwise. Can you talk to that for us?
Well, it was absolutely astonishing to me. But one of the secrets behind it all is there's a photographer in town, Jack Klawick, and he is a master at shooting artwork. And not only that, he's taught himself how to make a digital file. And he edits it so that they're absolutely flawless. So nothing really can go wrong. And it's because of his expertise, I say, that this is why the book looks so good. And in some cases, we had to re-scan transparencies that I had because the digital files that somehow degraded or were never as good as they could have been.
Exactly.
And he reworked them all for me.
And I think for our listeners of interest, that it is no minor thing to produce a book related to artwork. I mean, I can just imagine, how meticulous you were in the actual creation of the originals, but to allow then something to portray your original takes that much more diligence.
It does.
Yeah. The other piece of this, of course, is not only in Jack's contribution to the book and your body of digital files you had, but we should mention that every bit about this book was done within the city confines of Tucson, and you live in the Barrio District, of course.
Yes, and I'm proud of that we did it. We kept it right here.
So talk to us about your partnership then with Arizona Lithography.
Well, I've known Jack Davis and the people that work for him for a very long time. He printed my first print, which was of San Javier del Bac, and he helped me with that. And then I've done many things since, and they are really good at what they do. And it's amazing how, as we're going through press checks this time through the book, there's been something like 14 press checks, I think, or more. I can't remember. There's a whole bunch of them. It's been going on for 3 days. And there's not a scrap of anything that's wrong, and Gail Ballweber, who looks after the book for me there, she's one of those people that when she says something's going to be done XYZ, it is done just that way, without flaw.
That's right. Well, it is an ambitious undertaking to do any sort of book, which, of course, is manifested here at our book festival today, with all the technology that's out there in terms of people doing e-books and online and print-on-demand type work. But there's nothing like the good old touch and feel and hear of the printing presses and the flurry and the noise that you experienced, I imagine, here in downtown Tucson with a book coming right off the presses.
That's right. It's exciting to see. It you can't do it with a digital operation.
That's right.
That's too quiet.
That's too quiet.
Yeah.
Alan, take us back then. You've been an illustrator and were so many years really involved in the publishing world with your works appearing in print, and of course your collecting them at different times just to refresh your own memory since you've been an artist for such a long time. How is this journey different, though, the publication of a book related to your paintings?
Well, for one thing, it's a more permanent record than anything I'm used to. In the commercial world, it's here today and gone tomorrow. And this is the first chance I've had to have any... Well, this is the second chance I've had. The first one was I had my first one-man show at the Bradford Britain Museum in 97, I think, or 8, I can't remember, 98 maybe. And we had a brochure done that was about 18 or 19 pages long, and it had big, pretty good size reproductions in it. And that was fine, and I enjoyed it, and I've had it around, and it's been sold out of the bookstore at the Buffalo Bill for these many years. But I always wanted to have a better collection, a more rounded collection of a wider scope of my stuff that I'd been doing all these years. And so this is, it's a little bit like Christmas to me, watching this stuff coming together, and I can't wait to see it in one spot so that I can open it up like a present.
I love it.
Yeah.
Well, also, it's usually, as I'm sure many of the authors here today at the University of Arizona would say, it's one thing to do the book and go through the process, but really the life begins when those books start going in the hands of other people. just like I'm sure your paintings.
I would say that's right. And one of the things they'll notice when they open this book, there aren't a lot of words, so you can hardly call me an author. But what I'm encouraging people to do with a few notes I've put in there is I've always thought that half of the painting belongs to the viewer, and I still think that. And so what I think about it is one thing, and of course there's the accuracy of history, but what is it trying to say? And then everybody else that sees it, and I know this from my experience with the people who bought my paintings, is that they see things that I never thought of, which I think is, that's really the way it is, because people view things in a different manner. So what we're going to do is we're going to set up a blog on, I think it'll be on night horses mainly, where, and I've given a, if they look carefully in the book, you'll see my phone number. And if you would like to talk about it, give me a call. And I will point you to that blog, and then you can tell me what you think, and then we can discuss it. And I think it's one of the few ways that I could think of is to get my audience involved with this book, rather than just putting it down in black and white, and there it is, and that's that.
Yeah, that's right. To open up a conversation.
Yes.
Which, of course, the technology allows us to do that in this day and age.
It's wonderful.
You know, one thing I should mention for those who haven't done the math or back it up is that Alan celebrated his 79th birthday this past fall. So you're talking about years of investment and growth personally of what you've done through your various forms of art and now your additional foray into the publishing world. You mentioned the fact that this is a major collection and body of your paintings. Of course, it's not the typical one of a lifetime, right? The catalogue raisonné?
No.
Which we might want to explain to our listeners, because someone might attempt to say, well, this is Alan's total collection, but no.
No, no. You want me to define a catalog raisonné?
Yeah, just
well, it's a catalog raisonné is a collection of all the works. For instance, in my case, all the works I have done as an illustrator. I don't know if they would go back to a high school annual, but that would be disastrous. But for instance, I understand that the Remington catalog raisonné is in 2 500-page volumes, and it took 14 years to put together. But in those cases, the catalog raisonné usually has just tiny little pictures because there's so many of them.
Whereas now viewers here can appreciate the 12 by 12 size of your book.
That's correct.
The size of the paintings that are portrayed in the actual book. Well, again, it's been a real pleasure to have you join us, as always, here on Circles of Change. Alan Marden. For those interested, again, you want to visit nighthorses.com or alanmardon.com, alanmardon.com. Or even better yet, if you're based here in Tucson, come please join us down here at the Festival of Books today. Alan can be visited and meet at booth number 167, which is right off the circle behind Old Main. So, Alan, you've done one book. Is there a volume two somewhere in the making?
Oh, you bet.
And any We're idea thinking. What direction about that?
Not yet.
Not yet.
I'll get this one out first. And then we have sort of things swimming around in our heads, and we'll see.
And I think the best way to take that is to let those legends, horses, buffaloes, a chapter called A Battle of Massacre Braves, and A Great and Rich Society take you forward in that direction then.
Mm-hmm.
Very
That's
good.
Right.
Thank you very much for joining us, Alan.
Thank you, Zara.
Very good. Well, thank you for joining us as well. Stay tuned for our second hour here on Circles of Change. We've got two additional authors whose books are being debuted right here at the Tucson Festival of Books. And we'll be right back here on 104.1 The Truth, Tucson News Talk FM. Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it.